Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott revisit Bordeaux Blanc as they drink the probably superior Clos de Lunes Lune d'Argent from Pissac-Liogon in Bordeaux. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
No, Robert, this is Dr. Schwartz here to see you again. You've been missing your scheduled appointments, so I had to crash into the podcast.
What? Okay, sure. Anyway, on tonight's show, we have Scott, who's making vague references that nobody can understand. If you'd hand me that bottle. And we're drinking white wine again. This is a Wednesday episode, folks. I know it's between Christmas and New Year's, and I figured I'd wedge one right back in there.
Wedge?
Yeah. Wedge a good old-fashioned bonus episode. And this is kind of like the counter to the one you heard last Wednesday. So the Mary Taylor Bordeaux Blanc from who knows where it was. On that episode, I made reference to the Clos de Lunes Lune d'Argent. Maybe not specifically, but I mentioned that wine.
No, it means that's what he could find on wine.com during the episode because he's like,
no,
this Mary Taylor's crap.
But I've had, I didn't think Mary Taylor was crap, but I own this wine, the 18 vintage, but I knew of this vintage too. And the 18 vintage of this wine was $24.99. Well, the 19 vintage, Wine.com was selling it for $13.99, which is the same price as Mary Taylor. And looking at the bottle, we realized why. Because they ran over it with a truck. I mean, the label's all fucked up, but that's okay.
You know, when you're young and you, like, didn't wipe your butt real clearly, yeah. That's what the back label is. So it's like it's streak.
But that's all right. It was $11 off, so we'll take that. This wine is a more of a premium product from Bordeaux in a reasonable price range. Obviously, white Bordeaux can cost as much as red Bordeaux.
Allegedly.
But this one comes in at $13.89, but it also normally costs $25. And it's from Pissac-Liogon, so it's Medoc. It's proper. It's 70% Semillon, 30% Sauvignon Blanc. I prefer a more dominant Semillon blend, personally, from Bordeaux. I think it adds a little more ripeness, a little more flavor, and a little more color.
It's a different varietal.
It is. But it's the same price as the Mary Taylor. So that's why we're having this on the show tonight. Scott has a little chagrin because I think he wanted more red wine, but he's a drunk, so I'm trying to limit him. You know, I'm just trying to keep him in check.
He's just wrong. The rule of thumb is white before red.
I know.
You're violating it 2 weeks in a row.
We always have violet.
I always get violated.
Is that the ventriloquist thing we were talking about earlier, Scott?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This is Wilfred Wong on the show. You didn't know who I was. Did you know, Scott, I have a sister? I don't.
Sister.
No, I just put on a little makeup and I have a slightly different voice and I go by Milfred Wong. Would you like to hear that voice? Mm-hmm. It's very convincing.
Robert, you have added another voice in your head?
No, it's a sub voice to that voice.
A sub-voice.
Alter ego to an alter ego to an alter ego. It's almost circular.
Have you been taking your pills?
No. Anyway, so for Mildred Wong, I'm like, this is my impression of Mildred as Wilfred. Hi. See, it's a little bit, it's a semitone higher. Hi, this is Mildred Wong. See how I sound very flirtatious. That's right. See, I'm trying to get Scott. Yeah, he's right now. Yeah. You know what he just did, folks? He slid me a note that said, "What's your number, Milfred?" You spelled it wrong, you dumbass. But still, he already fell for it. Mildred is a flirt, but she's a prude too. She won't make the same kind of comments I will. Or will she? Who knows?
Anyway, So, Scott's completely perplexed.
Everybody's completely perplexed.
I don't even know what's going on. Nevertheless, folks, on tonight's show, we're going to try this wine. We're going to see how it compares. And we're going to have a lovely, jolly time here on the Wine Vault. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So, the Clos de Lunes Lune d'Argent from France, Bordeaux specifically, 70% Semillon, 30% Sauvignon Blanc. It does have several reviews. Now, I mentioned to Scott, it does have a 91 from the Wine Enthusiast, which they didn't include that on Wine Spectator or the wine.com because they don't give a shit. That being said, though, this wine is believed by most of the reviewers to be ageable. Okay? And they said drink from 2023. On Wine Enthusiast. And then, thank you very much. This is James Suckling. I reviewed this wine, Scott. Did you know that?
Yes.
I did. And I gave it 93 of my points. And I wrote, bright and zesty nose of green pineapple, gooseberry, lime curd, passion fruit, and crushed stone. Wax and nougat too. Why I didn't include that in the sentence before, I don't know. And why wax and nougat too. It's a complete stream of thought. I have no editors. I have no employees. In fact, I don't make any money from this. I work at Dollar General in my local store. I actually stock the shelves. I'm not even a manager. I'm a stock boy at Dollar General. But medium bodied with crisp acidity and fresh, creamy palate. Excellent length. 70% Semillon. 30% Sauvignon Blanc. Drink now. Or no, I'm sorry. Drink me. Or hold me.
Now hold my heart.
And then Jeb Dunnick. And Jeb doesn't have a voice because we respect him. But this is Tim Atkins. They don't respect me, so they have a voice for me. At least Rob the Wine Guy does. And yes, Jeb Dunnick did give this 93 of his points. I've never known Jeb Dunnick. He worked for NASA. Did you know that, Scott? He has excellent hair, too.
Mm-hmm.
And now he reviews wine. But pure white peach, tart pineapple, white flowers, and chalky mineral notes all emerge from the 19 Clos de Lunes Lune d'Argent Blanc, a Semillon-dominated, medium-bodied, concentrated, wonderfully textured wine. It's well worth your time and money. I don't have any money. I live on the streets. And I suspect it will have a decade of longevity. Jesus. Best after 2022. He thinks it'll last 10 years. Then Robert Parker. The 19 Lune d'Argent comes skipping out of a glass with bright, cheery scents of lemon drops, key lime pie, and fresh pink grapefruit, with suggestions of mandarin peel, honeysuckle, and wet pebbles. Medium-bodied, the palate bursts with vibrant citrus flavors and a racy backbone of freshness, finishing with pretty perfume. 89 to 90. So, a lot of good reviews, Scott.
Yeah.
In the glass, it looks very clear. Good crystalline. There's very little. I don't see it. Still, there's no effervescence. On the nose?
There's something on the nose that absolutely positively is not described in any of these reviews.
What's that?
Maybe it's this. Maybe it's
sweet green apples. One thing I smell. And a little vanilla.
There's something pungent, and I don't think that's a chalky, minerally tone.
That's where I'm coming from, the creaminess. It's almost like malted milk balls, but without the chocolate. But it's malted milk. That's Semillon, though. That's Semillon to a T.
Yeah. There's a certain pungent, almost...
Slightly grassy, too, but...
Yeah, maybe it's grassy in there with a pungency.
You know, almost something, like a wheat stock.
Something very... grainy, like that.
Yeah, wheat. Like wheat. Wheat stock. Unground wheat. If you've ever been around a wheat field when they're harvesting, folks, that has a slight aroma that this reminds me of.
But there's something petroleum-based about the nose for me that I'm picking up.
I don't smell that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
There was a reference to a waxiness about the nose, and this is more like a sweet solvent.
Mm. Oh. I just tasted it. It is medium bodied, like I said. Ooh. It's a wine where you take a sip and then you just sit back and say, now do your thing. Because this wine has length like a red wine. The finish is still going on, and it's all from that Semillon.
It's really interesting finish. Too. Mm-hmm. It's
there's like an apple rind.
Yes. There's this is gonna sound negative.
Yeasty.
It's not. There's just a touch of bitterness on the finish that's quite nice. Well, I think it's an expression of minerality.
Yes.
That comes across as
damn, the finish is still going on. It starts off as like a yeastiness, but it's not, because it's almost like a must, not like a musk. It's a grape musk that kind of rolls through and expands and expands and expands, and just has this, just kind of reverberates with this green apple grape muskiness. It's something that you experience if you go in a winery where they're making the wine and you smell the fermentation. It has that kind of aura to it. It's very rustic. It's very, you know, it's very old school kind of flavor at the finish. And the finish literally is a minute long, if not more.
It's one of the longest wines you'll ever have, the finish.
In a white wine, yeah.
One of the longest. The minerality is really unique. It's a light kiss of minerality right there in the mid palate that is wonderful. And then there's that other expression. We're calling it minerality. I described it as a slightly bitter thing that just dances throughout the finish.
Yeah.
A nice bit of acidity in there. I wouldn't call it an overly acidic wine, but there's a kiss of acidity that's
kiss.
Beautiful. That's coming from the Sauvignon Blanc.
It is, but this wine flavor profile is all Semillon.
I think you've got some kisses of the Sauvignon Blanc throughout that.
Kisses, but that...
In the fruit on the front, it just jumps in and says, hello, I'm here. There's that...
James is right, though.
One of them called it white peach. I don't know.
No, green pineapple. I mean, I like a slightly underripe pineapple is spot on for this the flavor profile.
And there is some peach in there.
There is, but it all comes a little bit underripe. One thing, folks, yes. I think that everybody needs to know. We're talking about Semillon, and I think it's important to discuss a little bit about. Why don't you look up wine folly for Semillon,
yep.
So we can explain it a little bit. Semillon is not a common grape in California. I mean, it exists in certain amounts, but you don't see 70% Semillon.
Do we do a Semillon from Oregon or from Washington?
We did the Le Ecole, which was fantastic, and then we did Sauternes is predominantly Semillon, and so we did a night of Semillon. That was a while back. Check out that episode. It's probably in the 200s. I don't know, season five.
It's
season
been a
four.
Long time ago.
Really, really, it was a long episode, but it was a really great, I think, a technical episode. Triple B she even thanked me at the end. That's shocking. She never does that. Wilfer's not on it, but we that was a whole jam packed. We're gonna get back. We haven't had many of these episodes recently. We're doing multiple wines.
She'd thank you more often if you deserved it. It's you, Rob. You're the problem. It's Rob.
Nobody knows that. Anyway, but we're gonna get back to some of these technical episodes where we're drinking multiple wines. We just have to not be drunk.
Semillon, white wine folly.
Yeah.
Important white grape of Bordeaux, including the prize dessert wine, Sauternes, can be surprisingly rich, and when oak can taste similar to Chardonnay. Okay, maybe.
Well, it can. It can be that. This is not on a great deal of oak, if any.
No. Primary flavors, lemon, beeswax, yellow peach, chamomile. Huh, I love chamomile tea.
I can see that.
Saline, so saline. Salty.
Yeah, a little bit.
Dry, medium-bodied, and this is medium-bodied. Yep. Medium acidity, 11.5 to 13.5. Fun facts about Semillon wine. France's fourth most planted white wine variety behind Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay. That's only two. Semillon is commonly blended, with Sauvignon Blanc and...
What
other varietal in white Bordeaux?
Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc.
It's commonly blended with Sauvignon Blanc and blank in white Bordeaux. Muscadel.
I didn't understand what you're saying. Yeah, well, that's a little further south, but yeah, Muscadel sometimes.
45,000 acres of Semillon planted worldwide. Really? Not much.
No, it's not. It's normally a blending grape with Chardonnay or other things. Australia, sometimes they do some stuff with Semillon. They do some dessert wines with Semillon. Semillon does really well if it's botrycized. So you have the bacterial growth.
Yep.
And it makes a wonderful, wonderful dessert wine. In Australia, check out Elderton's Golden Semillon. That is a really amazing, amazing wine. I need to buy some of that when it becomes available because it's a half bottle and it's under 30. But it really rivals a lot of
things. That's pricey.
It is.
And is that more in a Sauternes and a dessert wine style?
I wouldn't. First of all, I don't think that I would not say that the Semillon, the botrycized Semillons of Australia have the complexity. They're more like Dolce in California by, I believe it's Nickel & Nickel. Is that who does that? I think it's Nickel & Nickel.
That's right.
And so, no, it's Farniente. Sorry, Farniente. Their labels look basically the same. But it's a little more sweet, you know, apricot, things like that. Where Sauternes, often they embrace some minerality. They embrace some other aspects that don't necessarily go along with the California sun-kissed kind of viewpoint. I mean, I love Sauternes, and I have several bottles of Sauternes here and there, often half bottles. But what was the? What do we have? Well, I still have a bottle of that. The Bruges? What was
it? Seems like we did a budget Sauternes from Trader Joe's,
No, no, I got it from wine.com. It was $12. It was a half bottle. I have a bottle of that in there. It's Les Tours something. I don't know what it was. We actually gave that our wine of the year. We got our wine of the year.
Yeah. Seems like we did another one that wasn't as good.
You know what? We have done one from Giant Eagle.
That's what it was.
And that was terrible because it was bullshit. It wasn't real. I mean, it wasn't. So when you have the fake copy, you know, the fake Rolex Sauternes, bad. Proper Sauternes, good. But this wine is such an interesting thing. The length on this wine is so amazing. But you're really getting into a niche fandom when you get to dry Bordeaux whites, especially in the United States.
I think it's niche-y, but
that shouldn't be.
Who wouldn't like this? Let me rephrase that. What about this is not approachable? The minerality of it is not overwhelming.
Well, you and I know.
It's tasty.
You and I know. Okay, let me rephrase that. A lot of wines, and I've said this before, but wines are an acquired taste. They aren't necessarily what your brain says is tasty. And then even then, when you get into wines like this don't automatically register in your mind as what is tasty. This is like level 230 tasty. But if you train your palate and you get to the point where you understand not just reds, but you even understand whites. And that takes, I mean, that takes patience too. I mean, because we say, well, you're just drinking booze. Hey, man, it's a little more than that. You know, we'll get to that on the potpourri. That's an excellent potpourri talking about how you bring your palate along. But it takes time to really appreciate wines like this that, on their face, you're like, okay, it's a dry wine. It's white. I think I'll cook with it. It's you got to slow down, because one thing about Semillon, you're gonna think, oh my gosh, I've had Limousin Cellars. I mean, they have a Semillon kind of thing. Yeah, they do.
So,
but it ain't the same
for me, the novice white wine drinker. If you can get them to go slow with this, they're going to really like it.
It's a wine that if I'm going to set somebody down and give them a class, a master class on white wine, and I'm not going to overwhelm their senses with something that's ridiculous. This is a good wine to do that with. It's a challenge now. It's a challenge one. It's not something easy. You could sit them down with Kim Crawford or Kendall Jackson and say, do you like Lifesavers? Oh, great. Well, guess what? I've got a couple wines that taste like Lifesavers, and they'll enjoy that. But you can still show them elements, and at least, even though they're not like Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc, are they the best representations of that? No, but they're tasty, yet they do know what Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc roughly taste like, and they give you elements of that, so then you can point them in the direction of something that's maybe a little more serious.
So if I was going to use this at a tasting,
yeah,
to show somebody about this wine, I would take the challenge out of it. I would focus on two things: the length of the finish and those two touches of minerality. Everything else about the wine is naked. It's easy. It's there. It's present. And sometimes the teaching's in keeping it simple. This one would be easy to teach about.
On a one-on-one basis, though, you can't, at a casual wine tasting, where people are just going around drinking 30, 40 wines, they just want to get drunk, they're not going to stop and notice this.
You'd be lost in this,
but at
a tasting where I'm doing four things?
Yeah, and you have like a group of 10.
Yeah, 20 people, whatever.
And they are intentively listening to you, and you are instructing. This is a good wine for that because,
yes.
Well, this vintage was cheap. And I can see the ability to age for a few years there. I mean, it's just the Mary Taylor.
It's just good.
The Mary Taylor was simplistic, all right? But it cost $13. This, I bought at $13.99.
It's $25.
It is a $25 bottle. I bet you were buying at $13. I wish I would have bought three bottles.
But it's
yeah.
And that's the difference in the two.
Yeah.
But Mary Taylor is perfect at that price. You thought it was a little high price. You're being a little 80-20. Nah, it'd be better if it's $9.
It would be. It would be. I still would like to try their stuff.
This would be better at $9, too.
Everything would be better at $9.
Yeah.
But this is
funny how that is.
But I bought a bottle of this, the 18, at $25. So, but it got a 93 from the Spectator. And
it's you, Rob. You're the problem. It's Rob. It's you, Rob. You're the problem. It's Rob.
I'm actually aging a bottle of this from a slightly better vintage. So, you know, whatever.
Must be exhausting, always rooting for the anti-hero.
No one really knows that song right now, so.
It's like number 5 on the charts, sir.
I'm not on the charts, sir, and I don't know that any of our listeners are on the charts. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, none of our listeners know who Taylor Swift is.
Well, they know who
nobody,
she is.
Nobody knows
Triple B is going to a Taylor Swift concert next year.
Sure.
It's like $250. She's like, Venmo $250 to so-and-so. Went, huh? I'm not going to food. What the hell?
I'll go.
Scott, we need to go to a concert. Not that, but, you know.
It'd probably be a great concert.
Well, I've been to a Taylor Swift concert. It was free, but I've been to it.
It was free.
It was free.
How'd that work out?
Fine. I mean, it was a Taylor Swift concert. It was fine. It was a concert. It was a big concert. It was at, like, a big arena, so you're like, how many great... First of all, I'm not a Taylor Swift person, but... How many great concerts have you been to in an arena? Not
quite a few.
No. See, I like smaller venues.
I get that. We all love smaller venues, but you don't always get that.
The best arena concert was Prince, and that was free, too. And then Chris Rock was free, but that's comedy. I'm thinking Chris Rock. I've seen Chris Rock, Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry just did the same damn act. Joe Rogan, I've seen him a couple times. But I don't tell
Becky.
I saw Joe Rogan for free. That was before his podcast or anything. So because we went there for Dave Chappelle and we couldn't get in on Dave Chappelle, so we got free tickets to anything we chose. I'm like, oh, Joe Rogan, yeah, I know him. We did that. It was really funny. But that was several years ago.
Chappelle's been popping up on some of the Rogan
shows. They're friends.
No, Rogan's friends with everybody.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, in comedy. Well, not Louis Messina, whatever it is, but the one guy that he confronted, it doesn't matter.
No, they were friends. With Louis, the guy that's...
No, not Louis C.K. No, Louis Messina that was dripping off his jokes.
Yeah, they don't get along too well anymore.
No, they don't. No, he likes Louis C.K. that was jerking off in front of people. It's all right. Who hasn't done that? Well, I mean, people that you know. think about that, though. It's like...
It's creepy.
What was the big... Yeah. I mean, it's like, should you lose your... Yeah, I mean, it should be noted, because not everybody does that. It's just not...
I even...
You know, when somebody says, well, all he was doing was... Bro, would you do that? No. Okay. I mean, it's like, you know...
Is it too early to say even Harvey Weinstein said that creepy?
Harvey did that and more, but
is it too early to say that Harvey Weinstein would say that's creepy?
Oh, well, he did the same things. I'm not sure, you know, and then he raped people, but, you know, this is the thing. It's not a big leap for me. My concern is, okay, he's jerking off in front of people. All right, that's a problem.
Hey, come up to my hotel room. Let's have drinks. Yeah. Two women.
And then he's jerking off.
Yeah.
Oh, see... It already suggests...
Blocking the door.
Yeah, it already suggests that you have kind of left certain normal conventions behind. Let's just be kind here.
Oh.
And so, you are already doing things that are not okay. So what else... I mean, can you, like, go further down that road? You could.
Oh, God, yeah. You know,
I mean, there's no, you just don't do that. And you know why you don't do it? Because you don't do that. You just don't do that. It's hard for me to excuse it. Because if you'll do that, what else would you do? You know? You know what I mean? What else would you do? You might do something else that's even worse than that.
Because
here, ladies, watch while I pierce a hemorrhoid in front of you.
Oh man, who knows? You know, it just already suggests that you don't necessarily respect other people to the level that you should.
Do you think?
Yeah. So
do you think
the people that commit crimes on other people, part of it is they don't view them as people; they view them as objects. See what I'm saying?
Well, and that's the whole point of the whole issue with these types of sexual assault.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. is weird.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So.
Did you think he was funny?
I've never really found him funny either. I don't. Yeah, like him and Bill Burr and those guys. I don't like them.
I like Bill Burr okay.
Eh.
Louis C.K.
There's just no playfulness.
I watched this show a couple times.
Yeah, I just don't see any playfulness. There's just a lot of meanness. Even like Joe Rogan is playful. You know what I mean?
He's mostly
playful.
I mean, he's got some mean bits.
Yeah, but
he's a comedian.
Dave Chappelle is playful, and
mostly.
He comes across, even though he might say things that are mean. Oh, hell, I do that. You still, I still feel like he loves everybody. Truly, you know. I don't know why.
Lives in Yellow Springs.
I just feel that he loves everybody. I feel like he's a good person. I don't know why I feel that way. I just do.
Yeah.
You know? So that's my impression of him. There's people I feel that are good people and bad people. There's no reason for me to feel that way. I just feel that way.
Well, yeah. You're just judgy.
I don't know. It's just a feeling you get. Maybe he's from Ohio. Maybe this or that. I don't know. I just like Dave Chappelle.
He is from Ohio.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yes. Chappelle's show had some dark moments in it, though, where it's like... Yeah,
but he's pushing stuff.
Oof, he was definitely pushing some stuff.
I'm not going to judge that. You know what I do.
The Wayne Brady episode.
Okay, that's Wayne Brady, bitch.
Yeah, that yeah.
Yeah. That was Wayne, but that was Wayne Brady pissed off because they made fun of him. And so Wayne Brady pushed all that because he wanted to show you. Have you ever seen it? He's been interviewed about it. And he's like, you know, Paul Mooney made fun of him. So that was like Chappelle's like, yeah, you can come do that. It'd be fun. And so that was him leaning into that. Like, fuck you. It was good. It was good.
He had some moments.
Scott, am I going to have to choke a bitch?
Oh, my Lord.
I know. Well, anyway, that's all right. Nevertheless.
Charlie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's uncle.
Darkness, everybody. That was...
There's some lines
first
crossed.
Of all, Eddie Murphy completely confirmed all those stories. He goes, yes, all this happened. Beautiful storytelling. It just probably one of the greatest things. Even like the silliest stuff, like Samuel Jackson's beer. It's my beer. How's it taste, motherfucker? Why are you yelling at me? Yeah, just the smallest things. If you haven't ever seen Chappelle's show, check it out. It might help you understand me better.
I'm Rick James, bitch. I'm dead.
But, folks, we're going to take a break. But then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, on the potpourri tonight, we're going to talk about how you're going to train your palate to get up to this wine. And we're not going to... We've kind of...
We touched on it.
Yeah, sort of. But a wine like this has different elements that you're not going to see every day. And so, I think we talked about the fact that, you know, in a wine tasting where you have a professional that's not Scott, that's teaching 10 or 20 people, more of a classroom setting. This is a good wine to start off with. But how do you get to this point? How do you understand this wine? You're not going to understand this wine, you know, if you drink Pinot Grigio. Why? Because Pinot Grigio...
I think you're underselling people.
I'm not... Stop. Okay. What? How does this wine differ from a wine like that? I'm sorry, I'm eating... I have salami in my
cheek. It's really good salami.
It is good salami. It's better than the bologna salami, but... It is. I mean, you know, Becky made fun of my meat choices, but
not the first time she's made fun of your meat.
No, man. She's well,
on the air.
I don't want to talk about it.
Anyway, this wine, the complexity level is far exceeding what you're normally going to see in your normal bottling.
Sure.
And so, how do you get to this level? Well, incrementally, first of all, you first have to appreciate red wine to get to this level. Red
wine. Do
you? I'm going to tell you why. Most generally, accessible wines that have complexity like this that you're going to drink at a reasonable price level are going to be red wine.
Sure.
White wines that have complexity that are higher quality, you don't see them often. They're hand sells. I mean, how often do people buy expensive Burgundy that are white, Chardonnays? Not very often.
Nope. But so here for me is where I beg to differ, my friend, because it is a white wine. The different elements, they're more raw, they're more naked, they're easier to pick out than in a red wine. I think the subtleties are still there, but they're more, it's more open. I think the characteristics in this wine are easier to find and appreciate if you give them the lead in to what, here's what's happening, here's what's coming, here's what you've got. Slow down. Let this wine reside on your tongue for a second. Pull some air over it, then swallow.
But slow down. First of all, I know that that's what you've talked to several prostitutes about that, but that's okay. Well.
Former prostitutes.
Jeez. Well, they stopped. This isn't worth my time.
I taught them about white wine, and they... You got to change your evil ways.
And they found a train
Robert
track.
Robert.
Sat down on that fucker and just let it
ride. Before Wilfred stops loving you, you can't go on.
But...
Robert.
The problem is, what Scott's saying works in a controlled standpoint, but if you're just drinking this randomly, how do you get to the point of enjoying this wine? Okay, no, stop, Scott. You're not there to talk about a prostitute sucking you off. So,
oh Lord,
I mean,
no, that's your job.
I don't suck you off
to talk about.
Speak for yourself. This is Walford.
No, it's your job to talk about.
Scott, I understand you were at the Tamarack earlier today. You were by there. You drove right past it. You sent Rob your itinerary. He knew exactly where you were. You were right by... How long were you there? I knew how long you were there. Because I used my right hand. And that is more for... That's for speed. Not for... You know, I have a gentler stroke with my left hand. It's like someone else is doing it. So, Scott, he goes in the bathroom and he taps
his... Milfred? It's like Milfred? It's like Mildred?
This is Milfred. It's not Wilfred. Because Wilfred talks about more perverted things. This is, you know...
And it's not Mildred?
No, it's Milfred.
Milfred?
Yes. Yes. Mildred doesn't rhyme with Milfred. What? I'm too confused.
I'm just going to abandon the Wilfred.
That's thank God.
I know. But still, he was talking about this guy getting a hand job. But what I would suggest, to get to Semillon, to get to wines like this... What you need to do is start off, say you're just at a basic, say you're drinking red wine, start off, and you like the red wines we drink. And I assume the people that listen to the show are predominantly red wine drinkers. And quite frankly, I think that's pretty common. I mean, I've met people, though, that are exclusively white wine drinkers, that love white wines, that are quasi really aficionados on the white wine spectrum. That exists. And really, it is kind of a different discipline. I mean, we're talking about different flavors. We're talking about they come across differently. And it does kind of take a little bit of time to really focus. I mean, to really be good, we're really good, obviously, at the red wine spectrum. And white wine, Scott, you don't drink it regularly off the air. I don't drink it regularly off the air. I had a really good one on Friday night. It was Kay Vintner's Viognier. And I'll be perfectly frank, if you can find it, that's the best white wine you're going to find sub 20 that exists in the world.
I thought it was more than that. I didn't realize it was 1999.
Yeah. I'd buy a dozen of that right now if I could.
See, for me, I don't think you need to understand red to understand white. I think
what helps.
I don't think you need to. I think it'd be helpful if you have someone who can guide you along the way, but there's enough information on the wines you buy. And for example, this wine here, I think it's simple and straightforward. This is much more complex than most white wines, but it's still straightforward.
But where would you start them out to get them to this point? Say they don't like white wines at all, Scott. Say they drink red, but they don't like white wines at all. Where would you start them out?
Well, so it's an easy contrast. You just pick a plain, basic white wine that's simple, straightforward, on the dry side.
Name a wine.
And then you show them this. Well, that Mary Taylor. It would be a perfect lead into this. In terms of
show them a good one.
Compare and contrast. They're both good white wines.
But say, compare and contrast this to Kim Crawford.
I wouldn't go with a sweeter profiled fruit. I would go with, say, a drier, like a Fumé Blanc.
Well, this is a leaner wine. Yeah, for a Carano Fumé Blanc, actually might be a better...
Dry Creek Fumé Blanc. The Mondavi.
And it's not because it's still Sauvignon Blanc, folks, by the way. But
it's going to be a drier profile.
Well, I think that what we're talking about is we're talking about traditional Californian Sauvignon Blancs as opposed to New Zealand, which have a different flavor profile. And some of the big commercial ones, it's limeade time.
And I think you could probably, this isn't our go-to on whites, but like a crisp unoaked Chardonnay. I think you could do that.
Well, but they have a rounder mouthfeel. But for Semillon, though, that's the problem we're talking about. Semillon, how do you introduce people to things that taste like Semillon?
You would start with a dry wine, then you show them this. You don't start with a Semillon.
No, you do not.
You show them something that's going to be dry, and it's going to be not so complex, and then you introduce this, and you compare and contrast.
Here's the thing. Let me say this. With Semillon, a lot of the wines that you would be kind of leading into would be a lot more round and plush and softer. Semillon has a little bit more acidity. It's a little bit more rustic in its approach. So that's what we're trying to discuss here. So I said, well, you know what? Drink a Viognier. But Viogniers don't taste like this.
No, they don't. I think any of those that we talked about, the drier Fumé Blancs, an unoaked Chardonnay, even if it's more rounded, I think it would translate well to what we've got in the glass here. And then you can compare and contrast. Because the point of introducing somebody to this is wet their palate, introduce them to what's in that Fumé Blanc, what makes it good, what's good about this. And listen, man, people know whether they like it or not. That's what's more important. So yeah. If I was going to introduce somebody to this glass and try and teach them about what's different about this from something else, I sure as hell would want to make it be a good wine. That it brought into place.
Fumé Blanc is a good choice. That's the closest thing I can think of, really, to bring it into here. Cali Fumé Blanc.
But what I wouldn't do is use some fruity Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
Grassy,
Fumé, fruity, whatever you want to call it.
Because if you have someone that's what they like, the fruity thing, well, then they're not going to care for this.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be able to discern what you're trying to discern because their mind's telling them, I want the fruity thing.
Yeah.
So don't give them that fruity thing. Give them something that's good, that has merit, and you can show them the fruit and what fruit's there, and it's dry, so that's what this means. Here's the finish. And any of those Sauvignon Blancs, they've got nice, crisp finishes contrasted with this lengthy son of a bitch.
Well, see, what we would say then is from a kind of a hierarchy standpoint, say you start off as a novice drinking from a white wine, Rieslings. Next, we're going to send you, strangely, to New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, the Kim Crawfords, you know, that kind of stuff. The main line, Kim Crawford would be the one I would suggest. Fruity Sauvignon Blancs. And then what we're going to do, then we're going to take you around the bend. We're going to take you to Ferrari Carano Fumé Blanc. Same grape as the Kim Crawford, but refined to a point where it doesn't have a lifesaver in there.
Okay.
And at that point, you might get closer to a wine like this.
Or I might show them that Mary Taylor that we had last week, which is going to be more of a French style.
It's going to be a little more simplistic. But
dry,
yeah.
Simplistic, but not this fruit bomb. And then you know what I'd finish them with?
Rabbit in the Hat?
The Turley Sauvignon Blanc to blow their mind.
Well, the Turley Sauvignon Blanc, it's beyond this. I mean, the mouthfeel on that is
it's
Turley.
Unbelievable.
More glycerin. This doesn't have a glycerin-style mouthfeel.
But again, we're not talking about this one here. But if I was going to tour the Sauvignon Blancs, that's how I'd do that there.
Yeah, and quite frankly, the Turley Sauvignon Blanc isn't a lot more money than this. So, I mean, it's...
Same price point?
It's high 20s, I think. 28,
I think so.
29.
I think you're right.
But you can't find it retail, though. I've never seen it retail.
Probably in Cali you can.
But, I mean, White Coat's 35, so, you know. But that's more of a Rhone style. And that's the thing. We're ignoring all the Rhone. I mean, you could do a White Coat de Rhone and Roussillon and all sorts of great wines that are down there that we're ignoring, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of different variety within white. And I would suggest that anybody that wants to be kind of a wine expert is a strong term, but really be a wine aficionado. You need to branch out more than just red, because there's a great deal of a portfolio of whites that you can experience and still appreciate.
I think it's easier to pick the components out of a white. I think it's easier to find the minerality in a white. I think it's easier to find what the oak is in a white.
It can be, because we drink red.
Well, it's just that, in my opinion, they're more open. It's easier to find. How many times have we bandied about the difference between tar, tobacco, and what the differences are between the two?
Yeah.
Smoky oak versus charred oak in a red, where in a white it's easier, in my opinion. It just is. The subtleties are more open and easier to define. And not only that, but help explain to somebody and see what they are.
Yeah.
I mean it's just, you know, we love talking about the fruit profiles in white wines. Why? Because it's just a little easier. Mm-hmm. The tropical fruit in New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. This one's mango. This one's pineapple. This one is green apple.
I think some of those wines are a little more stereotypical too. So.
Well, but they're honest. They're open. They are what they are. Where, you know, savory fruit in a Napa red. It's for some people, what the fuck's a red currant versus a black currant? You know what I mean? Blackberry versus freaking raspberry or blueberry, you know? Or, you know, our classic description of Cali Zen, brambly fruit.
Well, I know what that means.
You coined the term, I think. But it's...
I didn't coin the term. It's been around for years.
But it's more difficult to understand, difficult to perceive, where green apple and a white wine, it's fucking green apple, son. I mean, it's...
Yeah,
it's,
you know,
it's,
green
apple. It's green apple.
Yeah. Well, I think that nobody, well, very few people in North America drink or eat currants or cassis or gooseberry. Well, gooseberry is white, but...
Yeah, your gooseberries... Or excuse me, your cassis is...
Boysenberry. You don't eat
my coffee. Is your mocha? Is
yeah. You don't eat
princess's chocolate.
But you have
Becky's dark chocolate.
You have
your
peach,
milk chocolate.
You have lemon. You have grassy. I mean, you know these things, so it's a little.
And I think it's easier to find in the white wine.
It can be. It depends on the white wine.
I really think it's easier to find in the white wine. So. But I think what we're talking about here is building your palate.
Can be.
And it, even if you like red wines and you're more of a red wine drinker, branch out, try some different white wines to build your palate.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think for me, it's easier to find minerality in a white wine. And I'm not sure I appreciated minerality in the French reds until I experienced it in white wines.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's easier to teach. It's easier to find. So in summary, this specific wine, I think, has a lot of merit to it in terms of teaching and talking points. You've got a couple different points of minerality, and what a wonderful long finish in a white wine. And it's Semillon all day long. Rob loves this varietal. I'm beginning to be a fan too.
I enjoy Semillon. Yeah.
I really. It's. I mean, it's. For me, there's Bordeaux style whites and Austrian whites, and their contrast couldn't be more prevalent in the wine world.
No.
This is viscous and long. And what I love about the Austrian whites are the crispness and the clarity of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that just that je ne sais quoi of the Austrian whites.
Well, Domaine Wachau. I mean, I'm sure both of us would... Even though we would be pass out drunk, if someone said, hey, I have this bottle here, would you drink a bottle of this? Both of us right now would say, yes.
Well, probably what both of us would do is like grab a rubber mallet and hit the other one in the head so that we could have the bottle to ourselves.
What about Neagle? I know that we've had Neagle on the show, folks. We didn't know at the time. Neagle is like, they're like, I mean, I can't think of a... Right now as a comp, but Camus, I don't like Camus. So think of like...
I do. We had a Camus last night.
Well, yeah, you did where you were. But Neagle is the creme de la creme of Austrian wines. And Scott and I did Neagle a few years ago. And we loved it. But we didn't really realize and appreciate what Neagle actually was. That we were drinking Austrian royalty when we were drinking it. It was magnificent. This wine's good, but it's no Neagle. But that's okay.
This wine's really good.
Yeah. Well, folks, we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, the Clos de Lunes, Lune d'Argent from Pissac, Léogon in Bordeaux. $13.99 is what I pay for this wine, but normally it's $25. But it's okay. Scott, what is your score for this white vine? 70% Sauvignon, 30% Sauvignon Blanc.
It has to start with a 9, right? I'm between a 90 and a 91. I'm probably underscoring it, but I'm going to go with a 90. Not really sure why. I really enjoy this. I think, fuck it, I'm going to go with a 91. It deserves that bump up. Not sure on the ageability of this. I agree. I just, more of a red wine drinker. And particularly when it comes to ageability, this feels like it's got some more time in the bottle, but what would it become different? What would it appreciably become better with age in the bottle? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. But I'm going to go 91. The two things that I'm a sucker for, minerality and mouthfeel, the texture of this wine. I wouldn't talk about a mouthfeel of this wine, but it's just got a texture, and I'm just going to say it's smooth. The other thing that is superior, unrivaled, in my mind, again, limited white wine, predominantly red wine drinker. The length of finishing on this bastard, is it infinite? Is it an infinite finish? How long is it? Rob said more than a minute. It's more than a minute.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously long.
Yes. At $13.99, it is one of the best values we've ever seen. That being said, I think it was this price because somebody ran over the back of our bottle, but that's okay.
Well, the butt mark streaks and underwear, it looks like it's a scratched off lottery ticket.
It does. Yes. It's been abused. But this wine is a wonderful thing. Even at $25, it's something that you should seek out, buy, have two or three as your example of a Bordeaux white, because you're not going to spend $80 on something. I think it does quite well for that. I'm going to give it a 90 of my points. I'm very happy to do that. I'm going to put it in the Hall of Fame as well. It's a special wine. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful demonstration of what Sémillon is within Bordeaux.
Bordeaux Blanc?
Yeah, and like Scott said, I prefer a Sémillon heavy Bordeaux blend. Why? Because I think that Sauvignon Blanc is boring in Bordeaux. No offense to the grape, Scott. Sauvignon Blanc is a wonderful grape. But I think that within their constraints and the way that they approach it, I think it can be very, very boring.
Sauvignon Blanc.
Ordinary.
Sauvignon Blanc can't do this. It can't express the minerality the way that this does. The length of finish. Yeah.
It can't express the kind of the ruggedness that this wine has.
Maybe it can. I just haven't had it yet.
This wine has a bit of a farmhouse feel to it. It has, you taste the winery it was done in. It just has a little bit of that spark, that je ne sais quoi, that you want. You want to be transported a little bit to where this wine was made.
Maybe there's a...
Mary Taylor did not do that.
Maybe there's a 70-year-old vine grown in the mountains of South Africa that can express this length of finish that's a Sauvignon Blanc. I want to taste it.
Yeah. This wine puts you in that zone, that mode, that mindset of the winemakers when they're making the wine. You know, it transports you to the vineyard. It gets you in that mood. You feel like, hey, man, I'm experiencing this culture, this wine, Bordeaux. It just it brings you in. It sucks you in. And that is a key to a good wine. It makes you feel like you are drinking part of the terroir. You're part of the culture this wine comes from. Not all wines do that. Those wines that don't do that, and that's one thing that we never stress, but it's something that's internal. If a wine brings you in to where it is, where it's grown, where, and you kind of feel like you're part of it, you experience the joy that the winemakers had, those are 90-point wines. Wines that taste more distant, they're the varietal. They taste right, but the passion, the fizz, the emotion just doesn't come across with what's in the bottle. Those wines aren't 90 points. Those wines are serviceable. They might taste perfectly fine, but they don't really embody what you want in a product where you're trying to experience. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to experience another place, another culture, another ideal. You know, that's what we're trying to do when we drink things that are from different places. Experience where they're from. If wines don't really impart that on us, they don't really express that kind of emotion, that feel, that love that the winemakers had, that's not a 90. So there's kind of a thing. And so this wine kind of gets that gets over that hump, because you do taste some of that. You taste the natural elements there. You taste the terroir. You feel like you're transported to France when you drink this wine. And for me, there's your 90 points. So folks, a 90, 91, a tip of the cap to this wine. And quite frankly, a tip of the cap to wineries that are attempting to do something great, which this winery does.
Domaine de Chevalier. We've had their products before.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, let me look at that.
Domaine de Chevalier.
Oh, yes. Chevalier. Yeah. you've seen them because I think they have a boat on their label, and they sell them at Total Wine.
I don't know the boat on the label.
Oh, you'd know it if you saw it. That's who they are. Oh, that explains a lot. But it's a good wine. Great job. Tip of the cap. Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame. Even though I erped in my mouth there for a second. I'm a professional though, so you didn't know.
It's you, Rob. You're the problem. It's Rob.
I know.
Rob never looks in the mirror, just into the sun.
So for Rob the wine guy and Scotty Lessons taxi driver, we are going to bid you adieu, but we will see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.